All right, here we are with another episode of the High Ground Powered by Premier Companies. How's it going, Sal?
Doing wonderful.
All right. Well, guess who we've got back with us? Josh Linville.
Favorite fertilizer guy.
Our favorite fertilizer guy with a plethora of topics, just returning from the Southwest Fertilizer Conference. So we know you've got a lot on your agenda, Josh. So first of all, how are you doing?
Doing all right, man. That's, I think at this point, what was the Southwest a couple weeks ago? Just now getting back to the point, I think my liver is recovered.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
You got to do what you got to do to sell fertilizer, huh?
It's the only way you can bear to actually talk about fertilizer with all the crap that's been going on.
Well, we'll get into that. So apparently this is your favorite season, and that just goes right along with your question of the day. So tell us, Josh, using all the creative talent that you have, what is your favorite season and why?
You know, I get these questions, and I feel like you're getting me ready to be a beauty pageant queen. I'd tell you what, man. I'd have to say spring. It's you know, you're coming out of winter. It's I always struggle with winter. That's a big reason why we always go down to Florida for races in January. It helps break up that cycle. But you know, spring, everything's coming back to life. You get to take the top off the pool. You know, you get back to yard work, that kind of stuff. So I'm a big fan of spring. I don't like what it takes to get to spring, but I'm a big fan of it.
Oh, I see a theme here. So that sounds similar to mine. So, Sal, what do you got?
I'm kind of like the fall. I like whenever the harvest is going on and you know, things are just kind of wrapping up in the summer. I'm usually ready for some, you know, the break to the summer heat. So I'm kind of like kind of a fall person, I believe.
Well, so I thought about this. I just don't like winter. I absolutely cannot stand winter. But so I think that puts me as a summer person because the next season's not winter.
Not
so
winter.
Yeah, right. So it's anything that's not winter would be my favorite. But I like it. Hotter the better.
I think it's Southern Indiana winters that are like 40 degrees, 38 degrees, and rainy, muddy, windy.
They can be a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be a little bit of a mess. But any winter, but those people who are fully committed in the Minnesota area or the Green Bay, and you just think about that's those people rough. Who go and watch football games outside when it's 25 below and the wind's blowing. I'm not for that at all.
It's a bit much.
Yeah, tougher, more hardy people than I am.
Well, but they've always told, I've had some friends up there and they told me it's a different, they said, you know, you get around like where we live in our little latitude, longitude, wherever it is, you don't get winter. You get cold, you get ice. It's just nasty. You don't get white. You get, they said up here, it's a whole new season. You snowmobile, you snowshoe, you ice fish, you drink a lot, right? Oh, it's all these things. They're like, we have a real winter. That's why we like it so much, is it's different than what you're accustomed to. They said, you know, if you go south, it's warmer, to your point. It's 40s and 50s, and that's not too bad. You go north and it's snow and it's beautiful. You get to do all these fun things. We live in that little corridor where it's like, oh, it's winter. Go sit in your basement for 3 months
sloppy.
And let me know when it's done.
Yeah. It's gray.
Mud.
Cold. Yeah, gray and mud. That's true. That is true. So, hey, well, here we are, and we've asked you back pretty quickly after being on here before because there's just a lot of stuff going on, a lot of conflicts around the world, a lot of things newsworthy globally. We've got some interesting crop prices going into late summer here. So what do you got going on? How would you best synopsize all of that?
I tell you what, the best way to do that is just, like you said, look at the grain prices. They stink.
They do.
And I think that is something we had talked a lot about prior to this conference a couple weeks ago going into Nashville. It's, guys, grain prices stink. They're not any good. And people were trying to justify, well, nitrogen prices aren't that bad. They're, you know, yada, yada, yada. Phosphate ain't that bad. And really what it was coming down to is they were saying the demand will be there. We are going to raise a crop in 2025. We're looking at 90 plus million acres of corn again, the beans, the wheat, and everything else. The demand for fertilizer will be there. Nitrogen, I agree. It's hard to cut back on nitrogen without, you know, having an impact on your yield. Phosphate, potash is a little bit of a different story, but I fully agree. Your demand is going to be there, but your timing is going to be different. The last few years, and I'm not going to act like farmers were just absolutely killing it, right? They weren't making money hand over fist. But they were making enough that they had to spend money. So you go and you can sit there and say, listen, phosphate's $800 a ton. That's outrageous. That's ridiculous. It's highway robbery. How could they do this to us? Listen, man, it's the market. Do you want it or not? Yeah, man, here's my check. Go ahead and make sure this stuff's locked up. Because we were looking at grain, you know, corn sitting at $5, $6, $7 a bushel. That timing changes so much. And that's an unfortunate part of it. As I looked around the conference at the lobby, you see a lot of folks who haven't ever had a contact to the farm. And I think that's a real disconnect. They don't understand how it works on the farm gate. They don't understand that, yeah, that farmer knows they're going to need nitrogen. There's no doubt about it. But do I really need to pull the trigger in July, August, when things are so out of whack like they are today? The answer is no.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
And the problem, I mean, that puts us at that conundrum we've talked about here before, is that if we don't order as a retailer, so the farmer doesn't want to pull the trigger because he doesn't like it, and so he doesn't fill up, and so where does because it's always been there, so the whole channel has got to make a move, or we could have a real supply problem. Don't want to sound like Chicken Little, but
right. And that's the thing. We're not going to sit here and act like, oh, we're not going to have product if you don't come buy it. That's not the case. To that point, we've cried wolf. We've screamed the sky is falling. It never happens. Product shows up. But think about it from a logistical standpoint. If everybody waits until the last minute, everybody turns into just-in-time demand. And that's great if you really are convinced the price are going to go down. But on the other side of it, you also start entering that fray of just-in-time supply. Truckers all of a sudden feel the crunch and like, wait a minute, I can start charging more. Mm-hmm. Rail cars aren't enough. I can start charging more. Barges aren't enough. I can charge more. Everybody in the supply channel says, well, they didn't want to take the risk. I did. I put this product in place, or I've got to pay up to get XYZ logistics set in. Here's how much more it's going to cost to get it into place.
Yeah.
You can see a situation where we always talk New Orleans, right? That price could go down $20, but your price still jumps up $20-$30 because that price is just so high to get it there just in time.
That's a good point.
But is our channel even built for just in time? I mean,
no.
I didn't think so.
Nope. No, we're talking we're summer filling right now, but that's that's because the lead time is long, and and you have to talk about the rivers freezing up at some point in time. We're not necessarily affected by that, but but we are affected by river levels and other places. And if barges get trapped and can't get back down south and get loaded, then we're in trouble, or can be.
Yeah. Yep.
So. I'd say, Josh, I mean, if anything, we're moving away from just in time because as yields continue to increase, I mean, it's going to require more. It's going to have more appetite for more fertilizer. And, as it just gets the volumes just get bigger and bigger. And I think at some point we're going to have some sort of, way where we can layer in supply to farmers somehow. I'm not sure how to do it, but it's a real problem.
Can be. And I think, Josh, to get us, I mean, we sort of understand the logistics piece of this, and the pricing is obviously what we want to talk about, but you're going to talk about all the different things going around the world, but we'll lay it on you right here early. You want to talk about any effects of it being an election year?
Hey, let's get flagged early.
Yeah, you want to go ahead? Yeah, you want to go ahead and get us squashed on YouTube right now? Go ahead. Let's talk about politics.
I'll tell you what. Just when I sit there and I think, hey, we can't have any worse choices, the world just goes and makes it even better. How in the world do we just keep getting into this situation? I will say, people have asked me from a fertilizer perspective, well, what happens if Trump gets in? Now, of course, the question is, what happens if Harris gets in? Well, unfortunately, I don't think it improves. And I'm going to talk about from a tariff standpoint, right? Because that's ultimately what we want. We want free trade. We want free flows of fertilizer around the world. And we don't have that right now. China cannot come here. There are tariffs on them. From a phosphate perspective, you also can't get Russia and Morocco. I think the question ultimately wraps around the hope that one or the other gets in and does away with the tariffs. I don't see that happening. And people are like, oh, Trump will get rid of it. He's this and he's that. Where do you think the Chinese tariff came from? Trump is a tariff guy. And I'm not saying that from a bad perspective. I'm just saying he is the one that implemented it. Right, wrong, or indifferent, he did that. Well, Biden and now Harris, they'll get rid of it. Well, no, the Morocco and the Russia tariffs, those were ultimately put into place while they were in power, and they've had 4 years to do something about it and haven't done anything.
So
to sit there and think that either party is going to do something that's going to fundamentally change the fertilizer market and how flows happen, I unfortunately don't see it today. Listen, I will happily put myself out there and say that neither side will change anything. The tariffs are here to stay, just so the market can prove me wrong. And I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see any.
That's awesome, Josh.
Trust me, if you want to know how to make a lot of money, go look at what I've done and do the exact opposite.
Well, on the budget we've got, that's why you're the guy we call, because we couldn't get one of the good ones. Well, it's interesting to think about all the other stuff. So tell us what else is going on worldwide. But I mean, the election is sort of the specter that's hanging back there on everything that we do. And you just think, man, what is that going to change? And ultimately, you're probably right. In the long term, nothing. In the short term, it probably affects everything. But
yeah, that's the thing. We always go into an election, we're like, oh, my party's going to change this and my party's going to change that. And nothing ever changes.
Yeah, your party says they're going to change.
Yeah, exactly. I can remember when the Republicans had the House, the Senate, and the presidency. You know what they did? They spent more money than any organization ever in the history of it. And you know what? The Democrats had the supermajority. You know what? They spent more money than ever. The only thing that the Republicans and the Democrats have in common is they all really like to spend my money.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And they want more.
That's right.
It's super patriotic, aren't you, Josh?
Raw. We're going to have to change the title to this.
That's good stuff. So, all right. Well, let's figure out what's going on in the rest of the world then.
Yeah. Where do you want to start? I mean,
let's start. I would like to go talk about the Ukraine again.
It's all about you, so.
It seems like that war is just it's drug on farther and longer than anyone ever thought. The whole area seemed it's mined, and at one point, you know, the Russians weren't going to let any kind of traffic flow out. There's no way that the Ukraine could be farming, but it never really had an impact. Is that just because of the oversupply of the rest of the world, Josh, do you think?
Well, from a fertilizer perspective, it's actually interesting. So Ukraine doesn't produce a whole heck of a lot. They're not an exporter. They don't matter on the global fertilizer export marketplace. Russia is. Russia is one of the leading exporters on all three, nitrogen, phosphate, and potash. Now, if you remember back to early 2022, that was the top end of all of our pricing. The true worry was we were going to lose all of Russia's exports. Not only did we not lose their exports, Russia is exporting at a higher rate than they would normally export.
Wow.
Their exports have actually picked up rather than slid or completely gone away. So it's done the polar opposite of what we've expected. Now, that is on every product with the exception of anhydrous. Now, anhydrous, you remember that pipeline runs through the east, southeast of Ukraine. That sucker's gone. That thing, if it ever gets used again, it would shock the heck out of me. But they are building new logistics to get those tons back out to sea, back out to the rest of the world. We've kind of abandoned hope that we're going to see them in a big way in 24. 25, we're hoping that facility is back up operational. And, you know, Russia was the leading anhydrous exporter. They've been doing next to nothing since then. That's 5 million ton a year that's missing.
Wow.
So hopefully these tons will start to show up. Just from an agronomical standpoint, hopefully those tons start to show up again.
Well, your turn, Ryan. Where do you want to go in the world?
I don't know, Josh. You just lead us. I'm interested in what you said. You had a urea thing popping up and maybe a phosphate thing popping up. So where are those being triggered from?
So, yeah, urea right now, and this is one of those things where I look at urea and I'm like, it seems like it's a little bit on the higher price when I look at it versus grains. And really, when you look at the comparisons, it's not as bad as it feels. But unfortunately, I do think it's going to get worse. I'm going to talk a little bit of a bullish story here. And each one of these by themselves is not a big deal. But when you start to combine them together for a longer period of time, I think this is going to be something that starts sticking us. So number one, Egypt. Big exporter. North Africa as a whole is a big exporter, but they've been having problems. Their gas supply shortages meant that the industrial side has had to shut down production. They're off again. They're on again. And the government, whenever things get hot, they sit there and say, listen, we've only got so much gas. We're going to give that to the public sector to make sure they can cool their homes, do all the things they need to do. We're going to take care of our people first. I have no qualms about that. Good on them. You've got to take care of your people first. The industrial sector comes second. And it does seem like they are taking steps to get back to normal. So we don't think Egypt is going to be a long-term supply situation, but there's been some hiccups. It's, you know, it removed tons from the marketplace. Brazil. Brazil, I believe, produces around 1.5 million tons on an annual basis, but they won't make a ton this year. Their natural gas prices there are so high that the company basically sat there and said, we can't produce it and make money. We're shutting down. Not until the situation improves. There's no reason for us to produce product and lose money. So just go off of a 1.5 million ton. Not only are you losing 1.5 million ton of supply, you've just built another 1.5 million ton demand because they've got to replace those tons from somewhere. That's a 3 billion ton swing on the global S&D. Europe, we've been talking about that for a long time, right? Fortunately, we saw production rates in Europe rise back up to about 75%. I was really hopeful this winter we were going to see the production get back to 100%. All these plants will turn back on. The Dutch TTF, the European natural gas price, got down all the way to a $7 MMBTU. Ridiculously low compared to the three it topped out at. We have not seen that last 25%. And since then, prices have jumped back up to around 10, 11 bucks a ton, or MMBTU. And I am going to say this. This is what I have heard talking to natural gas experts. They said $10 is about as low as it can get today because Europe is still reliant on vessels bringing product in. We are not doing pipeline. That pipeline, if you remember, was Nord Stream. It originated from Russia. And for those that are sitting there saying, well, it's okay, you know, they'll regain relations and those tons will start to pop again. No, because you remember they shut it down, but then all of a sudden somebody attacked it. There was explosions that blew up those pipelines. Now, these pipelines are engineered, right? They're engineered to be under hundreds of feet of water to withstand the corrosion of salt water and all this stuff on the outside. On the inside, not so much. And these pipelines have been burst open. They have flooded with seawater. They're worthless. As best as I've been explained to, those pipelines will never be used again. They need to be replaced 100%. They cannot be used as they are today.
Wow.
So even if we start to get these flows again, it's going to take a while to reestablish that pipeline. So,
is there a projection on how long that takes, Josh?
Well, at this point, I don't even know if they're working on it.
Yeah,
because the relations between the two parties are so bad, why would you spend any money even thinking about it?
Wow.
And here's the worst one. China. On an annual basis, we always figure they export around 5 to 5.5 million ton. And we have their export data from January through June. They have only exported 140,000 ton.
So none. Basically
next
none.
To nothing. Yeah. So asking the question around at the conference, asking a few people that might be in the know, what do you think they'll export this year? They might get to 1.5 million ton. That is a 3.5 to 4 million ton shortfall on supply. So 1.5 million ton loss of production. That's 1.5 million ton gained in Brazil. You're talking a few million ton in Europe with their production rate being 75%. You're talking a little bit lost in Egypt. You're talking 3.5, 4 million ton lost in exports from China. Those start to be real numbers. And I think the reason we haven't seen more today is just because everybody's just kind of standing back and saying, I don't really want to do something. It's July. I'm not making a lot of money. I don't need to make decisions. I don't want to think about it. But the longer we kick this ball down the road, eventually we've got to start picking up. We've got to start preparing. And I'm just worried about what this thing looks like if all of those things come together into a head.
Yeah, wow.
That's a lot. You did say that was a big issue. Wow.
Yeah.
You laid it out like that becomes really problematic. Could be problematic.
Yeah. And I don't want anybody sitting here thinking, oh, my gosh, we're going back to what we were in early 22. We're going to be seeing $800, $900 urea. I'm not saying I don't want everybody getting so freaking scared to like, oh, my gosh, you know, $300 up. I don't think that's the case. But I do think it makes a very good statement that we are going to see prices higher before we see them lower again.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. So when will people begin to make that decision? I mean, Brazil, when will they make a decision with their different cropping season? We need to remember other people are going to be moving at different times than we are.
Yeah, I think in a couple months, you'll probably start to see them back in a little bit bigger way. Okay. Truthfully, at this point, I'm more worried about our side. And I don't know what they make combine seats out of, but there's a magical elixir they put into it because – You can go into it before harvest and you're like, I ain't touching this stuff. I ain't going to buy a freaking thing. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. Man, you sit in that combine for a couple of days. Like, yeah, man, it's about time. We need to get some fertilizer put on the field.
Let's get some spreading done.
It's either that or nobody wants to go home and do the honeydew list. That might be it.
Yeah, that could be it too. Hey, if we're presented like we are several times here lately in the fall with big runs in the fall, I mean, we're going to need the product.
Yeah.
So we just need to make the decision to make sure we've got it here. Other product wise? Go ahead, finish up with the urea, but other product wise, do you see being affected this way?
Well, I'll tell you, that's really on the urea side. The other one that worries me is phosphate. And I really, my story circles around India. And so India is unique in that their farmers do not see world pricing. That price is subsidized and protected by the government. And when you look at India, their democracy, the governments are voted in, voted out. Well, they don't want to lose that vote because ag is most of the population. Well, when we started to see prices fall around the world, things started to get slow from a demand standpoint. They were like, we're tired of paying these high prices. They reduced their subsidy down to a price where basically the price had around the world had to fall so the importers could make money bringing product in. Well, that idea that prices were going to fall was all predicated on the fact that China was going to continue to export at normal paces. Well, they pulled out in the month of June. And they pulled out for most of the month of July. And China is a big, big participant, right? It's a small phosphate world anyway. And they basically pulled out for a two-month span. Prices have recovered around the world. India has not brought anything in. And as of June, the forecasted stockpiles of DAP was 2 million ton. And you might be saying 2 million tons is a lot of tons, Josh. And it is. Not for India. And the issue is, typically speaking, in July, August, they would bring in around 1.3 million ton. We don't think they're getting close to that because the import subsidy didn't make sense. Why would an importer bring in anything that they didn't have to bring in on a contractual basis? We think that 2 million tons could fall into a 1.5 million ton range. Maybe it dips into the 1.3 to 1.5. So why is this important? Back in, I think it was late 21, 22, Indian farmers started to protest and riot. There wasn't enough phosphate to go around, and they started to hear it, and they all started to get worked up, and they started to take to the streets. They started to ransack retail locations. Guys, there were articles I remember reading about farmers who couldn't get their hands on phosphate, couldn't grow the crop, and they killed themselves. Jeez. Because they just were not going to be able to come out of it. Their stockpiles were only at 1.1 to 1.2 million. So what I mean by this is, let me wrap all this up into basically saying, your world's largest buyer of phosphate is behind. It's a government-subsidized import, and they need to catch up. What happens when they go back and they look at the subsidy and say, okay, uncle, no more. We got to start getting stuff in. Guys, subsidy program's fixed. Go get us our product so we don't get in that same situation.
Jeez.
They become a black hole of demand. Scare you a little bit more. There are five main exporters of phosphate around the world: Morocco, Russia, China, U.S., Saudi Arabia. China, Morocco, Russia, all three of those have duties on. It's very, very difficult to almost impossible for them to come to the U.S. marketplace. Number four is U.S. That's us. It is what it is. Number five is Saudi Arabia. They can come here freely. There's no duty against them. Who's Saudi Arabia close to on a map?
On a globe, doesn't seem very far. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. They can pepper India pretty darn easily.
Yeah, they can go right there.
Wow.
So that's the one side of it. The other side of it is, we fully expect fall demand for phosphate is going to be down. We think there's going to be demand destruction. DAP versus corn is one of the worst ratios we've ever seen. MAP is one of the worst ratios we've ever seen. This is some of the worst values, most bushels of corn spent on each ton of phosphate that a farmer's ever had to spend. We think that a lot of fall guys are going to say, heck with it, I'm going to wait till spring. Now, does that bring up a logistical issue later on? Sure it will, but we'll deal with that when we get to it. I think there's going to be application rates are going to be cut because farmers are going to say, I bet 350 corn, you know, 375 corn, I don't have the money to spend. I got to cut something. Phosphate's first in line. So we're going to be sitting here in the U.S. saying, man, my demand's down significantly. That means supply should be up. That means that, you know, we ought to be seeing prices down. We got them right where we want them. But if the world market is going higher, our story doesn't matter. Because if they're doing this and we're doing this and we don't correct, our market will just start sending tons elsewhere and just say, fine, if you don't want to buy it, there's other people in the world that will buy it. We'll send it to them.
How much can we produce of our own needs?
If we were to produce and keep everything in the U.S., we could match our demand.
Okay.
The problem is
there's going to be better prices somewhere else.
Well, there's other prices elsewhere. You got to remember, we look at it from a North American perspective. So you got to bring in Canada because they're, yes, whenever I look at the U.S., I always have Canada as part of this. We're brothers. We're in this thing together. So that's where you start to get a little out of sorts. Obviously, we've been playing catch up since last fall. We had a huge fall 23, huge spring 24. We've emptied the system. So we're still trying to get filled back up from that. And there's still not nearly as much. Exports have gone down significantly, but there are still some tons ahead to Central America, South America. Fortunately, imports have done a decent job of recovering, even though a lot of the market is cut from us. We found some other supply routes. But again, it's just when you're talking about cutting three of the five largest in the world, it gets really hard to get that supply when you need it. Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez.
Well. Yeah. That was fun. Give me good news. What do you have on good news?
If you want an idea of how big that China story was, them removing themselves for June, July, I thought our New Orleans, Louisiana prices would fall another $100 a ton from where it did. My forecast for the Gulf of Mexico was that we'd see something in the mid to lower 400s. It only got down to lower 500s and popped up from there. Mm. I mean, that's how much it changed things from at least my perspective. I'm not acting like I'm right all the time, but yeah. That's how much of a swing it was for me.
Gosh, that's crazy.
That is. Well, any other front of mind topics for you? We plan on having you back on a regular basis, so I know that we don't have to touch on everything now, but we are beginning to be into that mindset of in the summer. Hey, we're going to be selling corn here. Labor Day's coming. Usually that's the magic window to run a combine. So in some of our southernmost parts. So, and I assume there's harvest going on other places. So are we far enough along anywhere in the United States to see demand drop or the response to those prices yet with harvest?
Not yet. I am going to be really watching, like Texas, red states, red dirt states. You know, there's a reason why country music always talks about, you know, red dirt roads and things like that, because farming is hard down there. Their yields are nowhere near as good as they are in the black dirt of the I states and places like this. I mean, that's the thing. I go up to my mom and dad's farm and look across the, you know, the hilltops and see all this beautiful green corn. It's easy to forget not everybody looks like that all the time. Those outliers, those quote unquote fringe states, they're the ones that are going to tell the tale. Corn states are going to put the fertilizer on. Like you said, our yields are massive. You have to replace those nutrients to keep raising those kinds of numbers.
Yeah.
But those outliers, they physically do not have the dollars coming in to help offset the cost of it. And I had somebody push back on Twitter like, oh, it's fine. You're not even thinking about it. Right? I was like, oh, okay. Maybe do seed dealers go to Texas and sell it down there for half price? Maybe the chemical, it's the chemical guys, right? They're the one, they cut the price there by half. Wait a minute. So John Deere is selling their tractor for a quarter in the state of Kansas. That's what it is. It's like, guys, no, these inputs cost just as much for those guys. It's hard living.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if we start getting to those states and everybody's like, dude, there's no demand, we're going to know we're onto the story. But, and this is going to be the part everybody's listening is probably like, oh boy, I wonder why he's talking about this, you know, helping these guys out. But seriously, I am not getting pushed by anybody. I'm not getting paid by anybody to make this statement. Have the conversation of what you will need or what you will not need sooner than later with your supplier, retailer, doesn't matter who it is. Have the conversation. Because you, like I said, there's a lot of price risk. There's a lot of crap baked into this. You start talking about interest rates at some of these prices, it chews into stuff and nobody wants to do anything. If we all as a collective whole just wait until November 1 and say, yeah, I guess I'm going to go ahead and farm this fall. With what? It may not be sitting there. Yeah. I mean, yep, the market will do what it does, but it's going to cost a pretty penny to make that happen. So the biggest thing I keep saying is don't let the markets lull you to sleep. Keep an eye on it. Have those conversations more now than not. It's easy to get ahead when, you know, grain prices, you know, corn was $6-7. Now's the time we got to start planning. Now's the time we actually got to start putting pen to the paper.
Yeah, it's easy to call a grower whenever when it's $6 corn, you know, how much fertilizer do you want? So, and I think that's good. That's good advice, Josh. Thank you. That's have the conversation about what you're going to need, whether you're a retailer, whether you're a grower, talk to your supplier.
Yes.
And get a plan, because doing nothing, that's a decision. You'll make your decision just by inaction. So,
yep.
Well, I think that's good for today. I mean, we'll chat again. We'll be post Labor Day-ish time frame for the next one, and if we can get on your calendar, and we'll have another month behind us, and surely there'll be some shaping up of something. You'll have more of the story for our trade territory, thinking about when harvest hits and fall application begins for us. We'll be bearing down on that pretty hard at the next round. So we'll be looking to see what your updates are, and maybe no change. Who knows at this point in time? But I'm assuming something's going to change. So
I was going to say, it's every time things look like they're starting to get quiet, something comes out of the woodwork.
Right, no doubt, no doubt. You got anything else for us? Words of wisdom?
Nah, not this time. Like I said, just keep having those conversations. It's so easy to just want to shut down when things get hard, and that's the time when you really need to start having more talks than not.
Okay. Perfect. Well, thanks, we appreciate Josh. Your time always, and we'll have you back, and thanks for all that insight. We appreciate what you do. So that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. See you.